Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining me right here, Brighteon TV, every other Friday, 2 to 3 p.m. Mini Ice Age Conversations, the uninsurable future. What you're seeing with these fires around Canada and the perceived global warming risks, insurers are not going to insure homes any further in so many locations, meaning you're going to have to give up your mortgage. They're going to get you out of the countryside. Most of these fire zones are strictly in rural locations. You're going to be forced back into the city at the same time now. In the next 30 to 45 days, the U.S. government, well, I should say the Treasury, is going to issue $1 trillion in T-bonds. We need to fund our debt. We have to go out at auction. Now, what's going to happen is the same thing has happened in May and June of 2020. Looks like silver's going to spike, Bitcoin's going to crash, and they're going to claim it's all because of global warming. You can already see how the rest of the summer's going. Join me when we come back right after the short break here, give you a glimpse of the future.
SAT123.com, they have put together a really incredible package. Emergency backup communication systems, power systems. We've got sat phones, we've got solar panels, and also the big 400 watt solar panel behind us there. And why does this matter? Because of course, right now we are dealing with massive risk of blackouts, and the power grid is just failing, you know, intermittently, but it's going to get worse because we've also got energy shortages. Think about the lack of coal power, the diesel problems that are happening right now. If you're in the military or the National Guard or Border Patrol or law enforcement and you need to be able to function even when the power grid goes down, or maybe you're a first responder, rescue team, firefighter, paramedic, you name it, you need to know about this equipment. So SAT123.com, folks.
And welcome back. Thank you for joining me right here, Brighteon TV, Uncensored. Let's talk about the uninsured future. You hear it again and again, you're going to own nothing. You're going to be happy. You're going to eat what you're told to eat. You'll be delivered what you get. You'll have no choice to actually physically inspect products before you receive them. You'll just be given. There will be no returns. And you might say, well, how would they ever facilitate this type of future? There's no way I'm moving out of the countryside. There's no way they're taking me off my land. You've heard this again and again. Well, then we have the fires. Big fires. And they all started at the exact same time. So it's really interesting. Within a 6-hour period, you have entire provinces of Canada all igniting in what? 1,000 fires in a 6-hour period? They claim lightning strikes, perhaps. Coordinated effect, maybe to mask the symptoms or what we're seeing with the year without a summer, to explain away the cold that would be ripping through the Northeast U.S., the Maritimes, Canada, Nova Scotia. It's the smoke that's cooling it. We're going to try to run through a couple of interconnected ideas today, see how it pans out for the future, because the economy moving through, not financial advice, I'm just talking about a repeating cycle. We get a step back 3 years ago into almost the exact same time, May and June of 2020. Treasury issued $1 trillion in T-bills, silver spikes, but they're going to scare you through the summer with the whole global warming agenda, for a better term. Coming into El Nino, and I mean, it's just a sliver, like 1/5 of 1/8 of a percent into it, and you should see the amount of news headlines running with it. El Nino, it's the warmest year ever. But we just had three of the coldest La Ninas in a row stacked on top. So how quickly do you think you can change Pacific water temperatures across the ocean from South America to Asia? Sure doesn't happen in less than a week, but it does in the media. They're magic. It's just magic the way they do it. So today's episode, as you can see, the uninsured future. So I've been following the fires a little bit here. I just got back from New York City last week, and I had to travel up there for some meetings, and some interesting things occurred while I was there. New York City, Monday, hazy Saharan dust storm kind the day, a couple days after. Now, one thing when I was in New York, I wanted to go to the Met Museum, you know, because I like that kind of thing. But on the side streets, there's a few other really much more local museums. There was a antiquities museum, and these are all in private households. You would walk by, there's a nondescript sign on the outside, and you would walk by these other, one was sponsored by the German government, Austrian government, And then the other one was just pure ancient history. All three of them told me the exact same thing. Oh, sorry, we're closed. Parts of the floors are closed. They're moving the collections and they're remodeling. Now, I could imagine if it was for one museum or perhaps one, you know, private residence, but not that being the excuse. And then we go to the Met. In the Van Gogh section there, same thing. Oh, the Van Gogh, we're remodeling this section. We're reestablishing. We're going to reset and you know, rotate the paintings out so the Van Gogh section's closed. And I'm thinking, that's strange. That's almost like they're taking the real valuable pieces out of New York in advance of what? Not the smoke. I mean, you can breathe through that. But here it is, New York City. This is going to be all the rage for the next couple weeks. It's already been blamed on warmer water temperatures, warmer human influences. It's wildfires. But if you could gauge where the jet streams were blowing and you lit off several forests, you could set in motion several different plays at once. Because you got to think about this. They're not going to do a single move. The move you're seeing in the media is meant for control, to try to get you to react in a certain way with your emotions. The other way is behind the scenes where they're three steps ahead going, well, if we do this, we'll trick on that, the smoke will do this, the insurers won't do that, we can take them out of their homes and put them in the cities. That's where they're at, way ahead of the smoke in the city. Oh, I can't see it. Tourism's down. Oh, well. So if you want to take a look at the forecast out, because I know some of you might be traveling up there, air travel's been snarled, they canceled quite a few flights. This is the forecast for us moving out. June 8th was just yesterday, but you can see where the densest is, and you can kind of see where the flow is moving offshore now. Now, this is going to clear out through next week, and it should go back to normal again, unless there's more fires, quote unquote. Magically, the forest will ignite itself. But you can see the wildfire areas. Now, I'm down there in East Tennessee where it's yellow and it says moderate. I've been out for the last week building my barn. I'm building a new barn. We've run out of space and we're, you know, we got growing machines, we got animals, got feed. I got seed. We're trying to get the back acres into buckwheat for animal feed and then high premium quality hay. Need more space, basically. So I've been outside a lot in this last week and it's been clear. So what you're seeing on the map where they show you the yellow is not really exactly where or what the densities are that they're showing you on these maps. So, you know, witnessing firsthand, actually trying to see if the sunsets are going to be red or look for this smoke and the hazy in the air. It's crystal clear in the mornings, crystal clear in the evenings. So these kind of maps are a little deceiving because I'm not seeing it with my own eyes. And that is on report ground, remote East Tennessee. And you can't tell me that the forest filtered all of this. I mean, smoke comes from above to below. So here we are, another map for you. Wildfire smoke density. So it's supposedly light, but it was medium a day before yesterday. Now, you notice up in northern Canada, you're going to look up and to the left a little bit. You're up in Alberta and Saskatchewan over there. British Columbia got fired off in the forest, lots of different fires there. But you'll notice that plume that's right there that, you know, kind of looks like a little foot sticking out or like a dagger, if you will. What does that look like for us on the maps here? And then you'll notice Northeast U.S., Maritimes of Canada is getting a little bit cleaner as the air pushes through. Well, what I just showed you on the chart here in the upper part of that elongated coming out, like I say, Alberta, Saskatchewan, et cetera, that's this smoke plume here that I got off, what's this one? GOES 16. Anybody can do this on your own. GOES 16. DUPAGE, DuPage, College of DuPage maintains this one, GOES 16 satellite, and you just put in full color and you'll be able to get these same images, and that line there will show you when you run over it, the dark spots, there'll be fires there, but this is what the smoke looks like. That is a tremendous amount of smoke coming up at the same time, a tremendous amount of smoke is coming out of the East Coast, and it just doesn't make sense why all this is happening at the same time. I'm going to come out on a limb and say perhaps it's ignited on purpose, some of them. Now, they have caught some people for arson, but I'm talking a way different level than somebody throwing a match in a forest. We're talking global agenda level. But another thing that was so interesting about all these fires was, check this one out here, the Northeast solar panel failures. They dropped 50% in power production because of so much smoke over the area. Now, the temperatures are kind of cooler because there's so much smoke obscuring the skies. Well, that's an excuse, is it not, for cooler temperatures? And if we look, you know, through 3rd through the 8th, and this is going to continue, it'll start ticking back up again next week sometime. So a full 2 weeks of very, very low power on the solar panels based on the wildfires. So that's not really the most reliable type of power that you want to have if it's obfuscated by smoke. What are they going to do? Turn back on the coal burning power plant, natural gas plants? Oh, sorry, they destroyed those. They demolished them. So no, they're not. It's what you get is what you get. Sounds like an Agenda 2030 plan, doesn't it? Reduce your life necessities to bare minimum for human survival. So if you don't have enough electricity because the smoke's there, too bad. Deal with it, serf, peasant. That's exactly the messaging that's coming out of the elite class right now. So significant wildfire, and they're giving you a forecast already. Areas in red are going to be ignited as we go through the summertime. Now think about how many people live in these areas that are in the countryside that are like, I've already prepared, I got my preps ready, I'm way out in the countryside. The only problem is I got a small, insignificant mortgage left that I'm trying to pay off. But if you cannot insure your home, that's a default on your part that can pull your mortgage. If it's the inverse, where something goes to central bank digital currencies away from US dollar, they may call it a digital dollar, but please be reminded, it's not the same that you signed your contract for. You agreed to pay back in US dollars. You did not agree to pay back in digital new issuance CBDC dollars. Keep that in mind. They default, you didn't. So it's a cat and mouse game of default and who might get the property and who might not. But you're going to be forced off. There is a very clean ploy to force people out of the countryside back into the cities. These areas, unfortunately, in red, seem that they've been targeted for removal of persons the best way they can, to set fires, to then claim zones that insurers won't touch with a 10-foot pole moving forward, which means you have no homeowner's insurance. You're going to have to move. Government or BlackRock will be right there to swoop that up. Guaranteed somebody will buy your property from you. But where are you going to go? So the case in point here that I'm making is now Allstate has joined State Farm Insurance Company, saying that they're no longer going to, from this point forward, insure anything in California because fire risks. They might say it's climate risk is another one they're using, but it's for fire. And then my little brain, just light bulb goes off and goes, we're seeing the biggest massive wildfires across all of Canada that you've ever seen in the remoter areas where a lot of people are, like I say, prepped out, ready to go for this reset. Anywhere you see more remote communities where they are ready for it, they're going to smoke them out, as I heard George Bush say about 50,000 times after 9/11. We're going to smoke them out, got to smoke them out, got to smoke them out of the caves, got to smoke them out. Well, you're being smoked out right now, which is a sad thing. But if you know that's the ploy, then you protect yourself somehow. So State Farm is not going to do any new property or casualty insurance on property. So if you have a farm and you want to reinsure because you wanted to have people out there working or have an Airbnb, they know the extra insurance that you might have in case of injury of people visiting your property, they're not going to do that anymore. And then Allstate is stopping any new home coverage. Condos, commercial homes, farms, real estate, whatever. California, bye-bye. So what we're seeing right now, you know, California is always pushing the envelope on the edge of these new ridiculous ideas. So this is just another one. And we're watching them in real time be the spearhead for the rest of the plan for the United States. So you have to ask yourself, what's your risk assessment? Because they're doing similar things in Louisiana and Florida right now, saying that, well, the storms are getting stronger because of global warming, that we might not be able to insure homes along the Gulf Coast or in anywhere along Florida Panhandle, all the way to Louisiana, parts of Alabama, down into Florida, because of too much hurricane risk. Now imagine that. 50 million homes can't be insured because of hurricane risk, because of climate. What happens? Are they going to pull the mortgages on every single home down there along the coast areas too? Pulling the mortgages across California because you can't get insurance? Or apparently as it is, there are other companies who will take you and give you high risk insurance because the two cheaper companies won't, but you're paying something like 10 to 18 times higher I said that right, 10 to 18 times higher for your insurance. Now, let's say it's $1,000 a year. That's either $10,000 or $18,000 that you just got hit with. Now, a lot of people I know pay $3,000. Can you pay $30,000, $50,000 for insurance per year on your home? That's what they're going to do. They're going to price you out after areas have been recategorized based on a risk assessment level from some sort of climate perspective. And that's the way it's going. It is written in stone, and the spearhead is California, and now it's going to be Canada. Watch Canada do it. It's so clean to see. I think it's going to take about a month or two, and you'll start to hear it in Canada. We can't let you rebuild in the fire areas. There's already been a fire there. It's a risky area. We can't. We're not going to reinsure, this sort of thing. And, you know, today's episode actually came from this one here, Marching Toward an Uninsurable Future. They're already telling you this is the plan. The plan is this. They're telling you plain as day. The plan is the devastating blaze has destroyed thousands of homes. We're not going to be able to insure it again. Now, right off, I feel like we're sinking down into David Jones' locker. Exactly what it is. So a good analysis here. This is Nova Scotia fires. And you can see how it's burning backward. Now, if you knew, again, where the jet streams were, and you knew it would be a prolonged high wind event, if you were to spark those fires along a line and just let nature do its thing, you would know the exact trajectory of the fire, where the smoke would billow to, and what areas would be engulfed. Because you'd already know the wind speed, you know the wind trajectory, you know how long the duration of it. Because see, it's almost like a controlled burn, but in a global sense, literally using the jet streams. I live out here in East Tennessee and near the Smoky Mountains and the Cherokee National Forest. There's a lot of controlled burns out here. But they do it when they know the wind conditions are right, or there's a rainstorm setting in, or they're going to blow it up a hill and they know it'll stop at the ridge and the winds will die down. So they try to time it. It's a Rubik's Cube of nature and purposeful ignition to try to clear the deadfall and debris out of the forest so it doesn't create larger fires. They call them like a 1,000-hour fire with all the debris. Once your thing goes, it'll lay on the forest floor and smolder and burn for 1,000 hours. They're trying to avoid those types of fires. I see it all the time. Like, for example, you'll see this, and you might think it's, wow, the whole, nope. And they'll put a warning out that said, hey, we just lit the forest out here. So if you see smoke from the northwest or whatever, that's Forest Service just ignited that one. And this is actually a controlled burn. Try to backburn over to some of these wilder major fires. So they'll set this in front of the fire front, and that'll burn into an area that's already been burned, and then it won't go any further because once that fuel is used up, it can't jump into a burn spot and keep going. It just, there's no more fuel. So what about the homes that are in this section here that are going to backburn through there? Oh, sorry. Forced evacuation, we're going to burn through your area. It's not just the wildfire itself. See, they can go anywhere they want and backburn and do ignitions if they want. And they're going to pull you out of your house. And when it's all burned up and you go back with nothing in there, your insurance company's not going to reinsure it. And this makes me so sad to see this, how this just demonic and just dark energy is moving now to get people into these cities and away from the countryside and self-sufficiency. We are in this battle between light and dark right now, and you can see it playing out so clearly. So these are the images that were used on CNN. I pulled this one here. You know, up in Quebec and, you know, a little bit in Ontario, but mainly in the Maritimes, Canada, Nova Scotia, that sort of thing. Not all the way up to Newfoundland. But they have like, oh, it's just a couple puffs of smoke. So I look at that and I go, no. That little bit of smoke right there is not choking out New York City. A bit, again, we're going to come back to Go 16. Every streak that you see, and I look for my purple cursor right there. I took that on the screen grab. Everywhere you see this smoke coming out, all those fires lit off in the same 6-hour period. Now, if it was thunderstorms, as they claim, I understand. We have lightning strikes here. It's a very, very common cause of fires. But that's not a frontal boundary of a storm system. That is discombobulated, you know, 400 miles long, and storm systems don't generally do that. They're talking about an electrical front 400 miles long that's jumping all over the place, back and forth between things, coming off, you know, the tip of the bay there, which would have a different climate system in itself based on the water rolling over the land. And then the smoke does start to billow, and then all of a sudden all these other subfires just start out of nowhere. It's almost like the earth opened up, cracked open, and lava's pouring out. Or was it something different? Because you're telling me all these fires ignited in a six-hour period across Canada, here in the eastern Canada, a Canadian area, excuse me, Eastern Maritimes. And then after all of this, can you believe today, look at the cloud pattern over that region right there, that checkerboard, it almost looks like terracotta stucco clouds. That's electrified right there. That's an electrified cloud pattern that you're looking at. Now, there's laboratory experiments that can replicate the exact same thing with the striations and what looks like a stucco, you know, after somebody's doing your house. Have you ever seen anybody do a stucco house on the outside when they get that and they mat that and get it perfectly flat? That's exactly what it looks like after they finish. Electrically induced cloud formations like that, and notice the swirls around too. They're almost taking on a cyclonic spin. Electricity does that, high amplification. You might want to do a little research on that. Now, that's all subset A of it. So we got the fires and, you know, you look at the base layer and you're like, well, they're going to try to get people off the land and whatever. Okay. Agenda 2030, you're going to own nothing. World Economic Forum. Cool. I get you. I know what your plan is, but it's really much deeper than that. So this chart here shows you, this is from Berkeley Earth, by the way, respected, highly respected climate science area, if you want to get information, Berkeley Earth. Even CNN uses them, Washington Post, but I do too because some of their data is really good. It's not all global warming rah-rah squad. They actually have like a split set of data between it. So what are you looking at here is volcanic eruptions. And every time there's a volcanic eruption of note, the Earth cools. And this is the chart here from 1750, Mount Lockie, all the way up to now. But since it stops at 2010, they don't have the Hunga Tonga eruption, which occurred last year in January, and they don't have the Shivalush eruption this year, which VEI-6, which is still sending sulfur around the northern hemisphere, sulfur dioxide, and cooling temperatures. So you can see a direct correlation here. Volcanic activity, large scale, cools temperatures. But also with a little bit at the bottom there, also due to changes in El Nino and Gulf Stream flow. We're heading into the El Nino right now. So these natural cycles are being ridden on top of to create more panic about global warming, to pass more legislation, more taxes, and more control over what you can consume. That's what this is all about as well. Just another layer, but there's three layers on this one getting deep. So if the temperatures are going to cool because of volcanic activity, how do you explain that to a populace when it's supposed to be the warmest year ever? You have to make up some other excuse why things are going haywire in the atmosphere. Massive smoke canopy, it cooled, didn't it? Oh wait, El Nino can change the temperatures also. Oh, we're heading into an El Nino. See how this is all starting to layer on top here? It's excuse after excuse for the changes we are seeing now and going to experience through the rest of the summer. This is not anyway an accident. This is fully on purpose. It's masking and riding on top of natural events to get a larger outcome. You know, just a little bit of this happening without any fires or without anything else. Yeah, you're going to get some cooling coming into El Nino, but that onset is extremely slow. But according to the media, it's all happening at the same time and it's just double layer caked and then, ooh, throw the cherry on top and pay more taxes globally. We'll come into some of these temperature changes that we're about to see. And how does this dovetail into the year without a summer? Because our food production is being lost as well and there needs to be an excuse for that. Talked about that right after the break.
I'm Dr. Brian Artis. This is Dr. Eric Naputi.
Right.
Dr. Eric Naputi, of all media platforms that are uncensored, what's your favorite?
Brighty On, without question. I mean, I love Brighty On TV, Brighty On Radio. I mean, it is the place to go to get the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. People are so sick and tired of being censored, and Brighty On has got this platform that is global. And it's just a blessing to be on it. It's awesome. I love all the people that are on there. And the fact that it's a network that's working together, it kind of reminds me of a family. You know, and we're all together doing this for the world, my friend.
Except without crying babies.
Yes.
God bless Mike Adams for all you're doing, buddy. We love you.
I feel that Juvent is helping me to get better every day in every way.
That impact is what has been shown to help improve your bone density. Without that impact, you're missing a very important nutrient in your physical conditioning program.
The Juvent Micro Impact System allows the person to create more joint range of motion. Now I know there's a chance that nourishment can take place to that joint.
Hello, I'm Dr. Hotze. Men, when things hit the fan, don't be crying in the closet with your wife and daughters. They're counting on you to lead them and to be a man who's physically fit, mentally sharp, and spiritually strong. At the Hotze Health and Wellness Center, this is what we help you become. God has given your body amazing restorative powers to heal itself. We're in the business of transforming lives naturally. We've developed an 8-point treatment regimen, which includes healthy eating, vitamins and minerals, and hormone replacement, including testosterone. Become the man God wants you to be. Our program for men will help you put a tiger back in your tank so you can protect your family during these trying times. Contact us at the Hotze Health and Wellness Center for a complimentary wellness consultation. Get your energy back so we can take our country back.
And welcome back for the second part of Mini Ice Age Conversations. I'm your host, David Dubai, and every other Thursday, 2 to 3 p.m., right here, Bright Jay on TV, Uncensored. Now, before the break, I was trying to explain a little bit about the wildfires as an excuse for cooling temperatures in the Northeast U.S. You can't talk about the warmest year ever and then have some sort of cooling based on volcanic activity and some of the eruptions from the Hunga Tonga eruption, as well as Shibaloosh, which ejected sulfur dioxide and ash up to 78,000 feet about a month ago. You're seeing cooling regionally based on the sulfur dioxide. Well, how much natural variability or natural changes in our environment are going to be allowed to be accepted inside the global warming narrative? You know, they can't say it's 100% man-made, because there are natural things that happen that change temperatures, like El Nino is one of them, La Nina is another. But they're really trying to grasp at straws right now, saying El Nino is going to cause the temperatures to run up. But it's not really even barely officially out of El Nino. It's like 2 or 3 days ago, they said, okay, the water has risen a little bit. And when I talk about expansion, thermal expansion on, okay, so they're starting to see that we're at the 0 point and maybe even 1/100th of a millimeter up, measurable by satellite, that, okay, we're in the beginning of it. But the media is already running with it. Like, oh, it's the hottest ever. This is, everything's responsible for you, this, that, and the other. So would you really want to come clean and say, we're going to have some massive food disruptions because of volcanic eruptions, and it's really not you, it's not CO2, it's the sun, it's magnetic activity on the sun creating more volcanism on our planet, and that's real reason why there's food crop losses and droughts, etc., because our jet streams are pushing into different areas based on electromagnetic activity. But still, the result is going to be the same. Higher food prices, more droughts, a huge amount of crop losses happening at the moment right here, and a lot of UVB radiation striking the southern part of our planet, which will be the whole theme of the summer. Wait for it. I mean, next month is really when it's going to ramp up. I've been looking at the ozone concentrations again, looking very depleted already. So, you know, they're going to have so many things to push and pull, move the chess pieces around the board. You're going to have ozone, you're going to have wildfires, you'll have some heat and oceans, the food shortages, the crop losses, etc. It's going to be a summer to remember. So how would you mask volcanic cooling? Because it's the same thing I'm seeing right happen now. With the smoke, they're putting all these maps out. And with my own eyes on my own property, being outside for the last week, I'm not seeing the smoke here. I'm not seeing the hazy, even when they put moderate. They're having you disbelieve your own eyes. And it's the same lies. If you repeat them enough, people will start to believe you. Weapons of mass destruction. Weapons of mass destruction. Weapons of mass destruction, as Georgie would say it. How many thousands of times do we hear that same phrase? Weapons of mass destruction. You repeat the lie frequently enough and people will believe it. Now it's global warming, hottest summer ever. Oh, El Nino, hottest summer ever. Oh, it's the wildfires. It's going to continue. But then how do you explain cooling in regional areas affected by previous eruptions that have been well documented in peer-reviewed research without giving too much away and letting the cat out of the bag that almost everything we're seeing is natural changes based on cycles? You can't tax that. But on this side, they need more control for taxation, restriction of movement, restriction of food, restriction of farming, demonizing farming now. It's nitrogen now that is the boogeyman. It was CO2, now it's nitrogen. Nitrogen bad. Well, nitrogen is 78% of our atmosphere, so nitrogen's probably not that bad. But the way they're saying, we got to cut agriculture, we got to stop producing. So what do we see with a year without a summer? I'll read it for you in the blue area, second sentence. The climate aberrations or changes or unusualness of 1816 after the Tambora eruption in 1815 had the greatest effect on where? New England, Atlantic Canada, and Western Europe. Now, does having those fires make more sense now? They can say, it's not a year without a summer. There's no effect from the volcanoes cooling these regional areas. It's the big ass, huge smoke density cloud that's really causing the cooling. See, that light can't get through all that smoke and that ash. Can't get through it. That's why the temperatures are cooler. It's nothing to do with the volcanoes higher up in the atmosphere. It's because of the smoke way low down. Don't worry about it. Go back to sleep. We'll make sure we can't get insurance for those homes. Nobody will live up there, so we don't have to worry about rescuing them or anything. So rest assured, it's going to be good from this point forward. So I'm going to be jumping over between Europe and the United States here. But please notice New England, Atlantic Canada, and Europe. And wow, those two, New England and Atlantic Canada, just got smoked out and temperatures are dropping. Perfect excuse. And if we want to look at how the jet streams were bent during 1816, I've used this chart before in a few prior videos. You'll notice that it dips really low. Maritime Canada. And then all the way over, and it dips low again, and we get changes in Europe through England and right down the Iberian Peninsula. So if we are indeed coming in and we're the warmest year ever and we see these cooling anomalies, it's not the smoke so far. It's something else. So I would have you look at the same exact areas in the Maritimes of Canada and the New England areas of North America here. And Greenland, by the way. Look at that cold up there. That's like what? 16 Celsius cooler than normal. But if we go, this is June 9th. Now, again, the media will say it's because of the smoke from the wildfires. But the wildfire smoke sure isn't up around Canada. Or I'm sorry, excuse me, Greenland. Up there cooling that down. But you can see the same cooling pattern that had set up in 1816. And if we move forward, June 12th, smoke will be way gone by then. You can't tell me that all this cooling across the central United States way up into the same New England areas is because of smoke and wildfires. A setup and repeating pattern. So, you know, we're going to jump out. June 12th is going to be, you know, chillier than usual across the grow zones. Won't affect the crops too much. It's not going to get down to freezing, but it will get into the low 50s. Like it did here last night. It's 52 degrees Fahrenheit. Unheard of for this time of the year. And if we continue off, which is June 16th, where do we see the cold again? Oh, that's the Maritimes of Canada, New England area. And it keeps resetting up for the same again. What's this? June 19th, the same setup. Look how cold that is. It's 20 degrees below the normal temperature. Same flow, same jet stream as 1816. But you're not allowed to know that. They can't tell you that because you'll know it's natural and then you'll start to dispute it. And you'll say, hey, what's the next thing that's natural that may be a fictitious man-made thing you're making me pay more global taxes for or reducing my meat consumption? At that point, people are going to start to get a little wake up. And, you know, the more people that wake up and share this information, please share this. Are you telling me that this anomaly of cold with the same jet stream set up from a year without a summer continues to the end of the month here? And it's just cold a little bit up there. It's in the exact same places that was referenced and tabulated by those alive at that time. Now, 1816 is not a long time ago. That's 200 years. There was really good science back then. We got paper back then. People wrote stuff down. They even had thermometers and temperature stations at that point. So here we go. Are you telling me that this cold anomaly, and that's all the further the models run out to, actually the 25th. So then again, we got another cold anomaly coming down to the same exact maritimes in Northeast U.S. and New England states, and that's just because it's because. The jet streams are hooking us up again with a year without a summer phenomenon. Now, I thought that's really interesting. Good data coming out of, that's why I showed you that chart with the beginning in Europe, the year without a summer. Because if we go to Iberia, otherwise, or Iberia, depending on how you say that, and we're going to look down there in Spain. So I chose Spain because, you know, it's supposed to be hot and dry and olives and these sort of things are kicking off or coming into summer. There's no way that Spain should be cold. Now, should it? Unless a jet stream pushed like it did in 1816, and that would explain some cooling. But, you know, it's going to be hot. It's the hottest ever. So Spain could no way, impossible for Spain to be cold this year. It's a hot, dry country. So here's Iberia. So I wanted to show you the temperature anomaly on 1816 on the right side. So if we look like at Madrid in the center there, it should be showing some sort of matchups with previous cooling if the cycle's back again after a major volcanic eruption, Tonga, which crossed both hemispheres, and the Chicxulub eruption. So if we see something like this, which should be some matchup. So I pulled this charts here. I like running through peer-reviewed data, and this is 2009. You have to go back into the Wayback Machine to get this one, but I'm a Wayback Machine fan, so I often do that. So we got Barcelona, Madrid, Lisbon, and Cadiz. And the left side there will show you the anomaly in 1816. So the temperature drop a little bit around Barcelona, not so much. But when we get up here in Madrid, huge drops. And if we come down southwest, Lisbon, for sure. That's in Portugal, though. And then if we're down here, Cadiz, you get some drops in temperature. So I thought, all right, I'm going to line these up and see. And here we go. Spain and Portugal are pretty easy to find on the map, aren't they? They stick out of the end of Europe down there. So easy to see. I'll go instantly right there. What do I see? Cooling. Do I not? Now, again, they're going to run with the intelligence, the warmest year ever. But your eyes, those people living there, do you think waking up 15 or 20 degrees Fahrenheit cooler than normal, like everybody is around here going, wow, this is weird weather we're having right now. A weather. It's not climate. Climate and weather are different. No, they're not. June 6th, 7th, 8th. Are you telling? Okay. June 9th. It brings us up to today. Now, I'm going to run through the models. That was 3 days prior. So it keeps staying cold there in Morocco, too. What is it? Oh, and by the way, if you look up to the northeast, why is there an Arctic front coming down already? Unless the jet streams. Spain, Portugal staying cooler, but then look at this Arctic front coming through central. You won't see that in Ukrainian news that there's a 30 degree Fahrenheit below normal temperatures. That won't make the war coverage. So I thought I'd spin that out and go, wait a second. How far does that extend over? Well, you can see it goes all the way through Central Europe, up through Mongolia. That is an Arctic front in the middle of coming into summer, not the middle, but the beginning of summer. Same exact setup that we saw in 1816. But see, that blows out the whole global warming narrative that you're responsible for everything happening on the planet. Then I go back to here again. Okay, we're back up to June 13th. Look back down in Spain and Portugal, cooler again. What do I see in Central Europe? The same setups, like these jet streams are setting us up. And then we go back, it was at June 19th, cool again. Now, these models don't run so far out in the future with the European models. I did the GFS models over in the U.S., and they, for some reason, GFS stops a little bit short on the dailies going out that far in Europe. But you can see clearly, based on prior cycles, that we're looking at some of these same matchups again. But I would ask you, really, like, how does the media come and explain this without explaining the natural cycles built into the mechanism? See, they can't. This is where you get stuck. That's where they get stuck. Now, we did have something similar, though, in 1977. And for those of you alive at that time, remember the Buffalo Blizzard when they had to bring the military in to clear the streets and deliver food. It snowed for like 2 months straight every day. 30 feet of snow. People couldn't get out of the third story apartments because it was snowed in at the third floor. So they had to bring the military in. Buffalo blizzard. I encourage you to look that up and see literally how much snow came down. But you'll see something very similar. That jet stream flow is pushing down. That's not you in 1977. What's causing it? We're repeating something again here that is going to cause crop losses. And that's one of the biggest things is all these natural cycles coming in are going to cause more crop losses, which will drive your food price up higher. But there's a war on food at the moment. They want to reduce American agriculture and close farms, just like they did the Dutch farmers. If you don't want to comply, they're going to try to force confiscate your farms in America. This is where it's come to right now. They brought the fight home here. That's why I'm trying to present you this information. They're bringing it here. It's already here. John Kerry brought it to us. It's time to stop. It's time for us to say no. But something on the economic front here, and again, this is not financial advice. It's just somebody sent me this graphic and, you know, explained it in a minute and said, do your own research. And I said, thanks for the tip. I will. So the U.S. Treasury is going to start T-bill auctions, and they're going to add $1 trillion into their coffers. They're going to refill the cash because they need to continue to fund the debt. Remember, whenever they need more money for our national debt, they put up an auction. Now, generally, trust funds, sovereign wealth funds, which is like a country, a lot of them in the Middle East, UAE would be an example, sovereign wealth funds. And then we have, you know, the sovereigns themselves, which are the bigger players like Bank of England and these types of central banks that would then buy U.S. Treasury bonds. So they say, we need more money to fund the U.S. debt. Let's sell a whole bunch of bonds up in here into the market. Everybody will buy it. It could be the 1 month, 1 year, 3 years, whatever it is. But they're offering extremely juicy rates right now. And it is a no-brainer for almost anybody managing money. Throw your money in there and you're going to get a crazy return of 8% or something like this. That's why they're raising the interest rates, to get more people attracted into the bonds. Has nothing to do with you or me. How are they going to stop inflation by raising interest rates? You're going to demand destruct? That makes no sense to a logical person. But anyway, it would make no sense either as selling treasury bills to fund a debt to just have all these wasteful pork belly projects that are out there. So this is what it's going to look like. We're going to run $1 trillion in the next 30 days into America. So again, cycles. What it's already begun to do is drain money out of the American banks again, because you're sitting here going in a quarter of a percent on your interest rate, or you can take that and move it over into a treasury bill for 30 days, 6 months or 1 year at 8%, 7%, 5%, whatever the offer is. And of course, I would take my money out of a bank if I had any in there. I prefer super money called gold and silver. Super money. Has been for 4,000 years plus. So banks are running to our government saying, help, we're losing so much funds, we can't stay solvent if you don't give us more money. So that's what you're seeing here. Is how much money is being injected into the banking system so it does not collapse. Emergency help for our banks. That's how much money is being drained out right now. And that does not look normal, and that looks scary for me, because it started around the middle of March when the announcement was made that this $1 trillion offering was on the table with extremely high rates. So what you're looking at is the green line right here is money going into money markets that would then purchase those T-bills. And the red line is bank deposits out of our commercial banks and out of our credit loans, credit, whatever you're looking at, anything in the banks. That's a huge disconnect there. That's why they're asking for emergency funding to the point of the highest record ever as of yesterday. Like eclipsing anything beyond 2008-9. I mean, like so far up that this is a warning sign that things are about to get bad if you're unprepared. or this could be this golden moment that you could make more money than you ever have in your life. Again, it's not financial advice. It's just like looking into the U.S. Treasury cash balance to see how this played out last time they did it. So I'm a fan of silver, always have been. You'll notice these two charts here match up pretty well. So the last time the Treasury issued $1 trillion and put it into our economy to fund itself, fund our government, quote unquote, was back in 2020, May and June. So I overlayered these right here. The price of silver was $11.94 when they started the offering on March 25th. It was actually probably a week or two later than that. I went into April and then they started. So you can see it was $390 billion and the price of silver was 11.94. So people are going to run for safety when this happens. And by the end of their issuance in July, the price of silver is $28.86. Look at that run up. That's $16 in just 2 months. Well, they're going to issue another $1 trillion. So if we use the same $16 increase in silver, it's going to go what it is today, $26. It's going to run up to $42. And imagine the news headlines. Oh, it's hyperinflation. Oh, it's this. That's why your food's more expensive. You can see you're going to get hit from every angle this summer. So there you go. The numbers are the numbers. They're charts. It's how, you know, it's past data. But on the inverse, Bitcoin, oh, hold on, my Bitcoin fans, you're going to get rocked to about $5,000 or $7,000. So the inverse is true. Bitcoin is at its highest when the Treasury is issuing the least because there's more liquidity out there. See, it's all about how much liquidity is out there or being dried up or put out into the system or taken back from the system. Right now we're in a quantitative tightening cycle. And the last time that Bitcoin was at the highest ever, and you'll see where the Treasury issuance was the lowest. But it's the inverse as we get into these peaks. It looks like, not financial advice, but I'm just saying, with the amount of liquidity, people are going to run to safety. They're going to run to gold and silver and treasury bills. So all that money that was out there, the stock market would be affected. NASDAQ was affected most last time. But all that money is going to get siphoned out and put over into safe haven assets. Bitcoin is not one of them. Bitcoin's going to get drained for a minute. Again, you know, you're looking at an opportunity. Silver might run. And then I went a little further back, and I was 2008-09. I lived through that period, and I thought, I wonder what happened. Because I remember silver skyrocketing then, too, to all-time highs. And it's the same exact thing. Look at the liquidity input from the Treasury, and look at the price of silver. Can't tell me it happened twice. It happens every time. That's the whole thing. And if you want to go down into micro movements on silver, and you just take each up and down line, people trade on this all the time. I talked to a person who really kind of explained it to me, so you know I could throw it back out to you here. But anyway, this is what it's all about. Once this money movement begins, they're going to throw the kitchen sink at you of fear. Know it's coming and prepare for it. The fear on the economy crashing, stock market's going to go down, silver's going to run up, and you're going to start to hear hyperinflation. Same time, we're going to have all these crazy weather events based on magnetic field changes and repeating volcanic cycles, jet stream flow changes, and then they're going to hit you from the climate side of it. And then you're going to hear about the non-insurance of homes. Then you're going to get nervous, nail-biting, like, will my home be insured? Can I stay in the forest? Can I stay in my nature place? And this is what it's going to be like for the rest of the summer. Oh, and then the ozone depletion event will start to add in after next month. So give it till, like I said a couple episodes ago, give it till, you know, the end of this month, right into July, and wham, you're going to start hearing about that too. So you're going to get this, like, trifecta of everything hitting you at the same time. Oh, the bottom of the planet's burning up from the ozone UVB striking the planet. The fish are dying. Their eyes are burning out from the radiation. Please prepare yourself. Until next time, bye for now.